in which after the Lord of the Sannyas. These things were not described very much by Chaitanya Bhagavata or Chaitanya Mangala Vrindavan Das Thakur. At any rate, he was the son of Narayani, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Narayani Devi, she was the niece of Srivas Pandit. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in his household or lila, she was just a young baby, maybe 3-4 years old. But Lord Chaitanya was very kind to her and gave her his remnants of prasadam. In fact, the word is used, if I'm not mistaken, by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that he showed respect to her, samman diya. The reason is that Narayani Devi herself was in Krishna's lila, one of the nursemaids of Lord Krishna also. And her name was, actually she was the sister of one of Lord Krishna's nursemaids. Krishna had a nursemaid in Vrajadham, whose name was Ambika. And she had a sister named Kinindika. And this Kinindika was later on in Chaitanya Lila, she became Narayani Devi. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya shows some respect to her by giving his mercy, special mercy he gave. At any rate, he is considered to be the Vyas of Chaitanya Lila because just as a Vyas compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the 10th canto dilates extensively on Lord Krishna's pastimes, similarly in Chaitanya Lila, Vrindavan Das Thakur has described the counterpart of Braj Lila, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in the theme. Srila Prabhupada also mentions that one should offer all respects to the predecessor acharyas. This is what we're doing today. So he's a great personality, and we can, on this special occasion, we can take shelter of his lotus feet and beg for his mercy. So we can begin Srila Bhagavatam now. As I said, we'll chant text number 17, but let me read the shlokas up until that point. Just for the sake of consistency, I'm going to begin with text 13, even though that was done yesterday, because it's all on the same topic. We're describing the different islands, and we've already discussed two of them, I think. Maybe one of them, I don't remember offhand. But at any rate, we're dealing with Kushadvipa. We're talking about these different sections of Jambudvip in which, or Bhumandal in which we have different, well, we'll read in here. We had previously discussed Shamalidvip, and there are the demigods for worshipping whom? Anybody remember? Everyone worships Narayana, let's see. They were worshiping the moon. And now we're talking about Kushadvipa, and we'll hear about this. So after Shamalidvipa, there's an ocean of what? What? No. Liquor, we heard yesterday. The ocean of liquor. You can imagine that. So here we have, outside of this ocean of liquor is another island. This island is known as Kushadvipa. What does Kusha mean? It's a kind of grass. In particular, we use this for auspicious ceremonies. Kusha means it to be a very auspicious substance. So this place, evidently there are many Kusha plants growing there. So outside of the ocean of liquor, there's another island known as Kushadvipa, which is 800,000 yojanas, that is to say, 6,400,000 miles wide. That's a big place. Twice as wide as the ocean of liquor. As Shamalidvipa is surrounded by a liquor ocean, Kushadvipa is surrounded by an ocean of liquid. Key. Good. As broad as the island itself. On Kushadvipa, there are comes of Kusha grass, from which the island takes its name. This Kusha grass, which was created by the demigods by the will of the Supreme Lord, appears like a second form of fire, but with very mild and pleasing flames. Its young shoots illuminate all directions. And Srila Prabhupada is quoted here, something that both Sri Karaswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say. Shushatkani, Sukomala Shikas, Desham Vachisha. Kusha grass illuminates all directions, but the flames are very mild and pleasing. This gives some idea of the flames existing on the moon. Why are we talking about the moon all of a sudden? We were on Shamali Gate and suddenly we're on the moon. Why? They worship the moon, that's the nexus, but throughout his purport, instead of really talking about this Shamali Gate or Kusha Gate, Prabhupada is talking about the moon, and he likes to emphasize that the moon is an effulgent planet because there cannot be effulgence without some sort of fire, but this fire is a pool. According to Ayurveda, we all gain energy from the moon. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita even, Krishna says, I become the moon, and I supply rasa to all living beings through the agency of what we call energy wafting throughout the universe, which is called soma, lunar energy, and in particular it creates a substance called ojas within the human body, which facilitates the circulation of pranas, which are necessary to maintain a sane mind and sound body as a human being. So the moon is a very, very, very valuable demigod, especially in nowadays, modern days. Everyone is basically suffering from overheating. We have magnetic frequencies everywhere, especially if you live in MVT. One god sister was telling you that it's described that if you live within 200 meters of one of these cell towers, you get the maximum effect of the radiation of those cell towers. And MVT is surrounded by five or six of them. So you can imagine. That this creates an overheated situation, and therefore, from an Ayurvedic perspective, if we have the benefit of the moon, and the moon's influence, especially its soma influence, and it creates ojas, it will help cool us down a little bit, balance the pH. In general, if you have high pH, that means you have high overheating, and you have a lack of ojas. This is a medical thing. Anyway, so these are the things that Prabhupada says. He chooses to dilate on the moon here because he wants to emphasize that the modern theory that the moon is full of dust is not accepted by the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada's books and Srila Prabhupada's presence and Srila Prabhupada's teachings in general, sometimes he takes an adversarial stance. He likes to create opposition where there is none, just to hammer into us the proper understanding, because we're so conditioned and socialized by the demoniac, which means godless, modern mindset, that it's actually necessary for someone to come along and do that. When we attain a certain level of good fortune, then we can respond when appeared to be devotee by divine grace, and we can accept what he says. Until that point, we may have some mental objections, or we may have even other kinds of objections. Anyway, enough for text 13. In text 14, it said, O King, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata, Hiranyaksha, was the king of this island. That is to say, he's the king of Kushadvipa. Kushadvipa Kati is called Hiranyaksha, one of Priyavrata's sons. He divided that island into seven parts, which he delivered to his seven sons according to the rights of inheritance. The king, that is to say Hiranyaksha, then retired from family life to engage in austerities. The names of those sons are Vasu, Vasudana, Dhritarashtra, Stutyavrata, Nabhigupta, Vivikta, and Vamadeva.
Shri
So we're still hearing about Kushadvipa, and Hiranyaka is divided into these seven parts. Throughout these chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find a lot of groups of seven, isn't it? Seven islands, seven oceans, and seven suns here, and seven divisions within one island. It's a notable thing. Okay, that's text 14, no purport. Text 15. In those seven islands, there are seven boundary mountains. Here's another group of seven for you. Known as Chakra, Chatasringa, Kapila, Chitrakuta. This is not Chitrakuta in UP. This is different Chitrakuta. We are Kushadweep now. Another mountain is Urdhva-Roma and Ravana. There are also seven rivers known as Ramya-Kulya, Madhu-Kulya, Nidra-Vinda, Shuddha-Vinda, Devadarpa, Kripa-Chita, and Mantramala. So just as we have here in Bharatvarsha, we have different mountains, right? Just like here in Braj, what is everybody's favorite mountain? Gorkhana. And we have so many rivers. How many rivers are considered to be sacred? We have seven holy cities, and we also have seven rivers, particularly sacred, of which Yamuna is one of them. Something we all need to think about. So like that. Every section of the universe has its own set of access points by which we can approach the Supreme Lord. And of course, it is also goes without saying that in each of them there are saintly persons residing who can help with the spiritual advancement of the population. Okay, so that's seven rivers, seven mountains, seven boundaries here. Now text 16 says, the inhabitants of the island of Kushadvipa are celebrated as the Kushalas, Kovidas, Abhiyuktas, and Kulakas. They are like the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, respectively. So each region also has its own castes, it would seem, its own sort of varna system. Just as we have Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, similarly here on Kushadvipa we have these Kushalas, the intelligent class, Kovidas, the expert martial class. We have Abhiyuktas, the farming and mercantile class, and Kulakas, ordinary people. So, by bathing in the waters of those rivers, they all become purified. They are expert in performing ritualistic ceremonies according to the orders of the Vedic scriptures. Thus, they worship the Lord in his aspect as the demigod of fire. So they worship the moon in Shalmali Dvipa. In Kushadvipa, they worship Agni. And they're expert in performing sacrifices. Therefore, there's an ocean of ghee, ready-made. How convenient. And Kusha grass is already growing there. So you're all set. If you're into yajnas, this is the place for you. Now, it's going to get interesting in the next text, because this is the first one on which the acharyas really say anything. None of the Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas at least have said anything on any of the verses up until this point, opposed to text 13. And now in text 17, let's chant this together quickly. Parasya Brahmanaha Sakshat Jata Devo Siha Vyavar Devanam Purushandana Yajnena Purusham Yaja Yajnena Purusham Yajna. Iti. Iti means a quote. So this verse is being quoted here. This is the mantra translation. This is the mantra by which the inhabitants of Kushadweepa worship the fire god. They say, O fire god, you are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, and you carry to him all the offerings of sacrifices. Therefore, we request you to offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead the yajnic ingredients we are offering the demigods. For the Lord is the real enjoyer. Why don't we repeat this together? O fire god, you are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, and you carry to him all the offerings and sacrifices. Therefore, we request you to offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead the yucky ingredients we are offering the demigods. For the Lord is the real enjoyer. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Jiva Prabhupada Ki Jai. The demigods are servants who assist the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one worships the demigods as servants of the Supreme carry the sacrificial offerings to the Lord. Like tax collectors collecting revenue from the citizens and bringing it to the government, to the government's treasury, the demigods cannot accept the sacrificial offerings. They simply carry the offerings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Stated by Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. Since the Guru is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he carries to the Lord whatever is offered to him. Similarly, all the demigods, as faithful servants of the Supreme Lord, hand over to the Supreme Lord whatever is offered to them in sacrificial performances. There is no fault in worshiping the demigods with this understanding. But to think that the demigods are independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and equal to him is called Krita Jnana, a loss of intelligence. One who thinks that the demigods themselves are the actual benefactors is mistaken. Vandeshi Guru Devam Karanam Karanayam Yatrapala Deshina Pamro Yamarasya. It's an interesting thing here. First of all, let's look at some of the words in this verse. The demigods, or rather the inhabitants of Kushadweep, are worshipping the fire god Agni, one of the demigods. And they address him in two terms here. They call him Jataveda, and they also call him Havyavar. The word var is an expression that one says during a sacrificial performance. Maybe it comes from the verbal root vaha, which means to carry something. And havya, of course, means that which is to be offered in the sacrifice. One of the Bhagavatam commentators says about this, havyavad havisho neha yato hairati havir nehas yato heto. That is to say, the person who conveys the oblations, that person is called havya, havyavad. So, jataveda. What does jata mean? Who knows? Jata. We talk about jata Goswamis.
By birth.
Anything born, or in a more general sense, jata means anything that comes about, anything that's created. So, veda means the one who knows. If you can derive it in a few ways. If you take it from the verbal root vid, it means vidnehe, someone who knows. If you, on the other hand, take it from the verbal root bin, then it means bindate, somebody who acquires something. Now, how does this refer to the fire god? Chandaveda. Anyone who is born in this world, anyone who is created, his motivation is known by the fire god. Because he's responsible for the sacrifices that person performs. And more tangibly, if you take it as pindate, to receive something or to acquire or possess something, jataveda, anything that is created in this world is going to be acquired by Agni. How is it so? You buy through fire. You need only grow up in Southern California, like I did, to know that every summer, half the state is burned down by wildfires. Sometimes I think that since no one in Southern California is offering sacrifices, therefore he has to take whatever he wants in this way. So he eats everything in the form of fire. So therefore, Jataveda, he gets it somehow or other. Now another interpretation of Jataveda is that fire is actually the creation of the Vedas. When we chant the Vedic mantras, those who are actually qualified to chant Vedic mantras, they can create fire. Therefore, Jataveda, fire is created by the Vedas. And the significance of fire is this. As one commentator puts it, yajnena yajanena yajyartha. One offers sacrifice through the agency of fire. So agency is the key word here. He's only an agent on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Now, here's where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Sridhar Swami agree on another thing. That ato devanam yajnena purusham harire harineya yajna. Please worship only the Supreme Lord Hari by sacrifices to the demigods. And he glosses that idea as anganam namna dattam angine samarpaya iti. That means you take whatever is offered in the name of the demigod and you give that because the demigod is considered to be the anga of the Supreme Lord, the limb or the agent of the Supreme Lord. You take that thing offered in the name of the limb and you give it to the person who actually owns the limb. Another way to put it is, yatha purusha haste dattam purusha dattam bhavati tathethi bhava. The idea here is that just as we say that we've given something to a person by putting it into his hand, so in the same way, we can say that we're worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, purusha, hari, by giving it to the demigod. We don't usually take this approach, do we? Usually in Bhakti Yoga we are taught that we directly approach, not directly, but through the spiritual master, we directly worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now these ideas are all related. It's a very interesting point. Here in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he's made some very interesting statements here. Srila Prabhupada says, he equates the Devatas with the spiritual master, it would seem, isn't it? He's quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Gurvashtakam in his purport. We were talking about Devas accepting sacrifices on behalf of the Supreme Lord, and suddenly Srila Prabhupada is talking about the spiritual master accepting service from the disciple on behalf of the Supreme Lord. It seems to be a change of gears in exactly the same way that we were talking about Shamalidvi, but suddenly we're talking about Purunga. So there's an underlying harmony in all the disparate teachings of the Vedas and all the different statements that are made. There's an underlying harmony, and it's good to see that. Here the idea is emphasized, something that we learned from the Brahma Sutra. Shakti Shakti Madhura Veda. That is to say that the Shakti and the person who owns the Shakti, there's no difference. They have the same person, the same purpose. So the spiritual master is acting as a representative of the Supreme Lord. The demigods are also acting merely as representatives of the Supreme Lord. And Srila Prabhupada goes so far as to say that there's no fault in worshipping the demigods with this understanding. Someone the other day was explaining this, that we have pure devotees. Those devotees that we try to emulate in that, they are worshipping demigods. Who are the favorite examples? Which Maharaj? Bharat Maharaj, also King Prachi and Varhi in some sense. He was absorbed in Vedic rituals. But higher than all of them are the Gopijanas of Vrindavan. They're worshipping Katyayani, that's well known here. So it's not that there's anything that is essentially good or bad, but the pleasure of the Supreme Lord is dependent by which one's authority has to judge this. Therefore, we always have to have a spiritual master. The spiritual master and the demigods and the shastras generally, especially those shastras that give injunctions, the smriti shastras, they all have the same essential function. They're meant to take the abstract principles and teachings of the Vedas and translate them into ground-level practical utility in this material world. The shastra can do that. The demigods can also do that. The spiritual master can do that. We cannot do that. Now, therefore, we accept the spiritual master. And Krishna, as all the shastras advise, he tells us that vidhi pranima dhina pari krishna seva. Or, if after exhausting all of one's selfish pursuits through this kind of karma kandya ritualism, one wants to understand what is absolute truth, then again, you still have to. What is the verse? Pariksha lokam karma jitam brahmo nirvedam ayana nasya pratakritena tat vijnanartho evam adivachye samitvani shrotrim brahmishnam. When you want to understand absolute truth, then you have to also accept the spiritual master. So in this way, there's an underlying harmony in all Vedic teachings. Actually, in anything that we consider, we have to consider two different aspects. One of them is Advaita. What does Advaita mean? Oneness, or non-dualism. And the other one is Dvaita. So here in the purport, and the verse also, the principle here is Advaita, non-dualism. Now the problem is, as Srila Prabhupada is quoted here, Bhagavad Gita refers to those persons who can't see this. In chapter 7, text number 20, which Srila Prabhupada referred to here. In fact, there's a couple of nice verses, so I'll just go back and read them. Krishna says that the intelligent person, after many, many births, he's sick of the ritualistic process and the temporary fruits that he gets, so he surrenders. And we've already described, or rather Mundaka Upanishad has already described how he surrenders. He approaches the spiritual master with firewood in hand. That is to say, he's ready to offer himself as a menial servant. For those who are not so advanced, who are not so intelligent, Krishna explains that next. He says, their intelligence is stolen by illusion because they're twisted by desires. Sometimes when we argue with someone, if we choose to spend our time doing that, we find that the problem is not a lack of comprehension. The problem is that there's a desire that one's attached to, which disallows the other person from understanding, or from acknowledging, rather, the point that is being presented, hopefully, from Guru Sadhu and Shastra. So this is what we're talking about here. They see someone as separate from the Supreme Lord, and therefore they surrender unto that person. Because their real purpose is to evade the Supreme Lord. That's called mukti kama. And it's the best motivation that exists within the non-devotional world. Most of the time, it's not even that august. Most of the time, we're trying to exploit the Supreme Lord, or more likely we try to exploit his energy. When we try to exploit the Supreme Lord directly, then we're called Sahajiyas. Otherwise, when we try to exploit his property, we're called either Karmis, or more often than not, we're called Vikarmis, sinful rascals in Prabhupada's language. So this is the thing. They're impelled by their conditional natures to do these kinds of things. And Krishna goes along with it. When they want to worship some particular demigod, Krishna says, I make their faith very firm so that they can do so. Because if you cannot believe in what you're doing, you cannot be successful. When I was in college, they taught us that unless you choose a topic for your PhD dissertation, you cannot do it, because it requires so much austerity that unless it's something that you're really motivated to do, you're not going to be able to do it. So like this. So like this, they are encouraged by Krishna, they're being acquainted by Krishna. They're even given a process indirectly by Krishna through the Shastras, by which they can fulfill that desire. But Krishna says here, Mayayuvatihitanihitan, this whole thing is done by me. I'm the one who set this thing up. Now, therefore, it's very ironic, because by the time we get to the ninth chapter, where Krishna is really emphasizing pure devotional service, then he says something that's very telling. Very strong statement, he says, in text number 23. He's talking about the people that we've just been describing. He says, that means they're also worshipping me. Shakti Shakti Madhura Veda. This is the oneness that we're talking about. But here comes the punchline. Yajani Avidhi Purvagam. They're doing so without proper vidhi. Why is it such a strong statement? Because the vidhi is there. Vedic Shastras give so many injunctions. You do this sacrifice if you want that. You do that sacrifice if you want something else. You worship this deva if you want this. You worship that deva if you want that. The vidhis are there. So how can Krishna claim? Make this bold statement. Yajani Avidhi Purvagam. They're doing so in an unauthorized manner, or in a way that's not enjoined. It's very interesting. The underlying principle behind all these contradictions, or at least distinctions, is that one must accept your devotional service. This is what the Bhagavatam sums it up right in the very beginning. Dismissing, or as Prabhupada says, I heard it say one time in a lecture, in Hindi lecture. We sweep out this Kaitava Dharma. So Bhagavatam says that after rejecting this Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion, so-called religiosity that is actually meant on aimed at exploiting Krishna or his property, or evading the same. This kind of so-called dharma is not really dharma, and therefore Krishna can say it's not enjoined. The thing that is enjoined, that by which you get eternal satisfaction, that by which Krishna is pleased, that by which you can enter into real love, which is what we see erroneously everywhere else, even in Shalmali Dvipa, even in Kusha Dvipa, certainly here in Jambu Dvipa, Haradharsha. So, Parajakande also. So this is the idea here. Now, why does Krishna address those persons who are Pratyajna? And why does Prabhupada stress this also in his purport? Even though we've acknowledged that it's perfectly acceptable to worship devatas if you have the proper understanding, the reason that we generally don't encourage is because most of us do not have this understanding. This is another thing. We're like children. And they say in English, babes in the woods. We're like babies wandering in the forest without a clue. In the forest of Vedic injunctions and Vedic teachings, we're like clueless children. And when children are clueless, how do you, every mother knows, how do you deal with a clueless child? Yeah, there's no reasoning. You just do this or do not do that. So similarly, the Vedas are primarily dominated by the injunctory mode. That's called Vidhi. And in the beginning, when we're very, very green and very new to the principles even of bhakti and not entirely sympathetic with them, therefore the injunctory mode is prescribed. Therefore we have, just as we have Vidhi Purvakam, worship of the Supreme Lord, so similarly we have Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi is based upon Vidhi. The Vidhi will always save you. Manusmriti says very poignantly that if you are unsure of what is the progressive path in life, if you're not sure, if you cannot discriminate what is dharma and what is not dharma in a given time, place, and circumstance, and let's say you don't have a spiritual master who can enlighten you, or you have a spiritual master who's not accessible, because that's another problem sometimes. Then he says, you do whatever the forefathers have done. Whatever your predecessors have done before you, you follow that. In other words, Mahajano Yena Dattava Sattvamna. He says, if you do this as your default mode, you will not go wrong. This introduced the element of extreme conservatism into Vedic civilization. It's a characteristic of that civilization. How much so? Well, let's take one example. In the Punjab Valley, they have found shards of this, what do you call these things the women wear? Churiyan, right? These little glass bangles of jangle. They have found shards of those that are identical to those that you can find in the market today. But they're dated from about 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. Which means that they've been wearing these things for that long. Shards of pottery in exactly the same shape as you can now, even now, buy stainless steel katori and tali. Same thing. That is called cultural continuity. And it is inbuilt into a civilization that is based on Vaidhi. Vedic Vaidhi. Vedic Vaidhi. In conjunctions of Shastra. Very, very Shastra civilization. So this is an important thing. So Srila Prabhupada's stress on Vidhi Bhakti is necessarily, it emphasizes Dvaita. We talked about Advaita in the beginning. Now we come full circle and we're talking about Dvaita. Advaita, Dvaita. That means monism and pluralism. Not exactly dualism, but pluralism is a better way to look at it. That's how Madhva sees it also. So, the Smriti Shastras, the spiritual master, and especially for the Vaishnavas, those of us in this Kali Yuga, not at Panchadatra. This is the Vidhi mode of injunction that we get from Shastra that emphasizes dualism. Sometimes people get bent out of shape because in modern society, the ideology is often tending towards Advaita. And being socialized in that mindset, we feel chafed. We being chafed a little bit when there's too much Advaita, too much dualism introduced into the picture. Therefore, I mentioned earlier, Srila Prabhupada sometimes jabs us a little bit with these sensitive areas. For example, we don't like to hear about that there's fundamentally inequality between different kinds of human beings. But that's there. Not just in Bhagavad Varsha, it's also in Kushatri, as we've read already. When we chant the holy name of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then we approach most quickly that stage that Krishna calls Dvandva Moha Nirmukta at the end of chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita. Freedom from the illusions based on dualistic existence within this material world. And and it's a characteristic of piety. It's a characteristic of what he calls in chapter 16, sattva samshuddhi, purification of one's existence. So when we chant Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra, our hearts become gradually purified in the fastest way possible. And then it becomes easy for us to accept some of these difficult sections of the Bhagavatam, or difficult sections of difficult injunctions, or difficult instructions that we're asked to follow. There's a lot of things that we could describe here in this verse, but I'm going to end right now. We've mentioned just about everything that there is to say, based on what the acharyas have commented, because their comments are very sparse in this section. But if anybody has any questions or comments, you can respond to those. Yes, on the other hand.
Thank you. It's illuminating my thoughts. My question is, it's talked about in the Prabhupada course that the demigods cannot actually accept the offerings themselves. They can simply carry them to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, what is meant when we hear different sections of Bhagavatam talks about the specific demigods taking their share of the sacrificial
offerings? Yes, good question. The demigods, they accept a certain quota of a given sacrifice. Actually, let's give you Krishna's answer. The demigods, they are due a particular quota from any given sacrifice. And so they're allowed to take that. Although they're conveying at the same time the result of the offering, the content of the offering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
But excuse me, it seems to imply what we read in the purport there that they, you know, actually the Supreme Lord gives them that, right? In other words, they carry the entire offering of the Supreme Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was about to get to. In the same way that the spiritual master is entitled, you can say, to accept worship from his disciple, or he's entitled to even chastise the disciple, because that's his duty, that's his pocket. So in the same way, the demigods, they're entitled to some portion of the yajna that's offered. And the reason is that the universe functions as the harmonious as a harmonious unit only because everybody does his part exactly as he's enjoined. This is described in chapter 3 when Krishna says that a person should offer sacrifice. In fact, he's a thief if he doesn't offer sacrifice. And when the demigods get their share of sacrifice, then being thieves, they will give to us whatever we need as well. It seems as if it's all independent of the Supreme Lord, but in fact it's not. These things have been ordained by the Supreme Lord as the indirect path of sustenance and maintenance in this material world. When we say that a person who maintains dharma is maintained by it, that's literally true, because the act of sacrifice, any sacrifice that is, authorized by Vedic injunction, that very act is contributing to the sustenance and the harmony of the entire cosmic manifestation. And this thing is not visible to us, it's not even comprehensible to us, and therefore in the Purva Mimamsa system it's called Adrishta, the unseen factor. We cannot see the connection between what we're doing as a sacrifice for the Supreme Lord via the demigods, or for the Supreme Lord directly via the spiritual master. But that is the fact. So when the demigods, when they're nourished by receiving their part, their quota, as the Isha Upanishad says, then they in turn they give the proper things for the rest of us. And when they don't receive their fair share, so to speak, then neither do we. And that's why the water is running out in California, for example. And that's why, I mean, we have water wars all over the world now. And here G-A-N, not D-A-N-N. Gap politics means, you get some corrupt politician and you can decide to wipe out a bunch of villagers down the street by exploiting the force of the water for some electric power plant or some such excuse, you see. When human beings worship devatas, the devatas are happy and give human beings what they need. It's a symbiotic relationship. Therefore, the Shruti Mantra says that when a person drops out of this process by taking to either Brahma Dhyan or Krishna consciousness, the devatas sometimes are not very happy. The 11th canto also goes so far as to say that the devatas sometimes put obstructions in the path of a person who's trying to check out of that system. In exactly the same way that a farmer loses a cow, even if he's got 1,000 cows, he's not happy because it's his property. Right? So it's a symbiotic relationship, and the devas, they actually do benefit from the sacrifices that we offer. And we also benefit from the sacrifices that we offer because they return what's required. This is all described in chapters 3 through 5 of what we need to do for you. Is that okay? Maybe here. Anything else? Yeah, in the Shastra you find two kinds of command. One of them is called vidhi, that's a positive command. For example, Srila Prabhupada has asked us, the vidhi he's given all initiates of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, chant your 16 rounds. This is a vidhi. The other kind of injunction that we find in Shastra is a vidhi is also called chodana, something that you have to do. The other kind of injunction is called nisheta, it's a prohibition. And again, in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada said the prohibition do not break these four principles. Right? So that's vidhi and nisheta. And all the Shastras, according to one reading of the Vedas, the Purva Mimamsa reading, all the Shastras consist of nothing but either vidhi or nisheta. It's all meant to tell you to do something, and that's not incorrect. Now in Vedanta or Uttara Mimamsa, we take a different approach. We want to know, okay, but why? Just like when you go to America, this is the thing that you always have to fix. No matter what you present anyone with, why? The West in general, this is the mindset, why? Why do I have to do this? Why? So, in Vedanta, the why answers are given. Why we do this? Because you're part and parcel of the Supreme, you're actually a spiritual entity, you're an eternal being, you're not a part of this material world like this. So, all the vidhis and all the nishetas in the Shastras, they actually are meant to serve one principle, and that overriding principle is smartavya sadadam vishnu, vismartavya mental vishnu. That itself is another vidhi and nisheta. The vidhi is always remember Krishna, the nisheta is never forget Krishna. This in nyaya, or logic, this is called Dhyati is a kind of pervasion. You cover both sides. You say something positive, you say something negative, there's no possibility of misunderstanding. You see? Anvaya Vyatigeshi is called. And we find out more else in the Bhagavad. Is that clear? So the Shastras, according to the Karmakanda reading, the Shastras only consist of commands. And you have to follow them. You don't have to understand them, you just have to follow them. The Vedanta understanding, on the other hand, is that the Vedas consist of nothing but teaching, because there's a reason to follow a command. What is it? We want to know why. You see? They're both correct. You can't say it's one or the other, it's both. We were talking about Advaita and Advaita, and in fact it's always both. Advaita is always valid. Advaita is also always valid. But how these things match, you cannot understand it because it doesn't fit within mundane logic. That's called a chitta bheda. Okay?
But how would this be Shruti and Smriti? This should be the leadership will be considered Shruti and the Vaya will be considered Smriti, or is it?
I'm not sure I'm following your question.
What is the difference between Shruti Shastra and Smriti Shastra?
Yeah. There's no real difference between a Shruti and a Smriti if the Smriti is bona fide. But you know, people now in Kali Yuga, they invent all kinds of Smritis that are not bona fide. That's a problem. Shruti means the original four Vedas in the Upanishads. They're always bona fide. And they're never in question. Because the very nature of how the Vedic mantras have been preserved orally, it is such that it's impossible to get them wrong. So the Vedas, the texts of the Shruti mantras are sacrosanct and fail-safe. With a Smriti, you may be dealing with a bona fide Smriti, you may not be dealing with a bona fide Smriti. Therefore, every school usually accepts a different number of Smritis in a different class, or different, you know, different Smritis. We accept Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad-gita, and the works of our acharyas. But we don't necessarily accept, for example, Devi Bhagavatam. You see? It's also a Vedic scripture, it's also bona fide, but it's not within our canon, you see. So if we want to be called Vaishnavas, then we have to follow the Vaishnava authority. And that person is known by the company he keeps, and that person is known by the injunctions that he follows. Is that okay? Anything else?